This is Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer. Inside the evidence, behind the headlines, from someone who's been there. Here now, Jennifer Coffendaffer.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Thanks for being here, hopefully at halftime of some of your NFL games, if you're an NFL watcher. If you're not, thank you for spending some of your Sunday afternoon with us. This isn't going to be a long live, but yesterday I talked about two more lives I was working on. I was hoping to come live yesterday two more times. That was a bit optimistic when it comes down to work combined with family things. But I'm glad to be with you here today. I want to talk about Jake Harrow and the case of Emmanuel Harrow. I want to bring everybody back a little bit to the beginning on this case for those of you who might not be familiar with it. If some of you remember this case, how it first started, this is Rebecca Harrow. This is the mother of Emmanuel Harrow. Emmanuel Harrow was a little baby that went missing. Now, this is a screenshot from one of her news conferences that she gave, if you will, making this plea that she was working on changing the baby's diaper and somebody hit her over, you know, hit her, struck her. Obviously, the eye, I think, was meant to be evidence of this. And the baby was taken from her and this whole bunch of garbage about a kidnapping that took place of her baby in the parking lot of a Big Five, basically a strip mall parking lot. And then, of course, her husband, Jake Harrow, he chimed in with the whole thing, too, coming forward saying, yes, you know, please help find our son. It was for most of us that watched those clips from the beginning, from word one, we were all extremely skeptical. And I would even go so far as saying, and I know I said on my Twitter, rubbish. This is like another Susan Smith situation. Because many of us have seen this over and over again, either in our careers or as trial watchers, as true crimers. But for me, this was just an obvious situation of lies from the beginning. None of it added up. Sure enough, after search warrants were conducted and so forth, a week later, police arrested both Jake and Rebecca. Now, I want to talk about what happened after the arrest, because this part was very interesting for those who don't know. First of all, it was clear very early on after Jake's arrest that he was cooperating in some sense. We know that because we watched footage of him in the foothills out in the middle of this field where he was obviously trying to find the body of Emmanuel Harrow. And they spent quite a long time out in these foothills. And obviously, if Emmanuel would have been put there dead all those days earlier, he would have succumbed to serious deterioration, not only because of the elements, but because of the wildlife and so on and so forth that would have been in those foothills. You know, from my perspective, I thought, I don't know how in the world they would ever find this poor baby, because likely would have been drug off and so on and so forth. I won't get into the gory details of what happens to children who are found, or adults, anyone who is found by animals left abandoned and deceased. Just the vultures alone will wreak havoc. But nevertheless, we saw a scene. So at that point, I knew, all of us knew, he was cooperating. There is no other reason for him to be in this field searching than for him to be cooperating. Now, about this time, there was a huge discussion about that was broke on News Nation about the Perkins operation. Now, it was interesting because at the time I had never heard it called a Perkins operation. And I found out that was because that's sort of a regional colloquialism, verbiage that's used in law enforcement and in the prosecutor's office regarding essentially having somebody go on the interior of a jailhouse and make conversation with somebody who's been arrested in hopes that they will confess or somehow say something concerning the crime that they're alleged to have committed. Obviously, the Bureau uses techniques like this. We don't call it a Perkins operation, but they're very intricate. First of all, you either have to have an informant that you use that is either already inside that jailhouse facility, or that you implant in the jailhouse facility. And because these jails, it's a sieve for information, kind of like Twitter, X, you have to be very careful because something that's not legitimate will be exposed very early. The word just gets around. This person has to have in their jacket, their file, legitimized that they are there and that they were arrested, printed, and so on and so forth. Also, these operations have to be completely secret, meaning no one usually ever knows about these but the wardens, because as you know, the more people that know about a situation, the more it will spread and the operation will be ruined. You can also put law enforcement in, but they have to be what we call backstopped completely, so it looks like they're a criminal and that they legitimate would be there. And again, typically the warden and maybe one other person right underneath the warden that would be more responsible operationally for making sure that they could be in the same cell together. Those are the only people that would know. So anyway, there was information that came out about this being a Perkins operation, and that during that operation, that Jay Carrow said that he had indeed killed baby Emmanuel and thrown him in the trash. Okay, so that was from this Perkins operation information. And separately, we know about him working in the field. So that told me he was cooperating. This is the rub. Can we believe Jay Carrow? No. There's no way we can believe him. There's no way that he was telling a jailhouse person that he just meant the truth necessarily. There's no way he was telling law enforcement the truth necessarily when he's out looking in these foothills for where he said he left baby Emmanuel. So that's a big problem for law enforcement because you don't know what to believe. But nevertheless, there was at least one confession, and I believe two confessions. Purportedly, he said he rolled over on the baby. But for those of you who listened to the news conference given by the DA, he made it very clear they weren't buying that. That's not how baby Emmanuel died. A baby Emmanuel died from pervasive and continuous assaults and beatings and abuse. That's what they said. That's what they believe. That's certainly what I believe. This whole rolling over on him is a bunch of garbage said to make, it's called a self-serving statement. When we hear individuals say things that make them look less culpable or less like a monster, especially when you're talking about making a confession to somebody you believe is a fellow inmate. Saying you squashed them when you rolled over on them goes over much better than saying, yeah, I beat my kid all the time. Now, I need to go back for everybody really understand this case. We need to go back to Jake Harrow's first little baby girl. To be clear, he had a 10-month-old baby girl that he viciously beat, causing extensive bruising, extensive issues with her brain, fractures to her poor little body. And unfortunately, the beatings that he gave her over the 10 months of her life resulted in her being in this state today, being bedridden, being mentally, unfortunately, very handicapped due to this severe physical abuse. So many of you who aren't familiar with this case might be wondering, well, how in the world was he ever released after what I would call attempted murder? A case on a 10-month-old baby. How in the world could this person ever be released that could cause this kind of damage? It's very simple. A judge completely dropped the ball. In his words, the judge's words, I'm paraphrasing just slightly. Listen, you're going to have 10 years over your head if you mess up, but I basically think you deserve another chance. I posted on Twitter the exact precise words of this horrific judge who decided to give Jake Haro another chance. Well, the result of that was the damage that I think we all could see in these photos of this poor child that had issues with eye movement, that wasn't alert, that was just complete, in my opinion, you know, people tried to say, well, maybe he was born with these issues. We now know. I mean, he was severely abused his whole life, just like his sister, and it resulted in his death. So where are we at today? Well, there was huge breaking news a couple days ago because Jake Haro, as he sat, this is him sitting in the courthouse, he did exactly what he did with his daughter's situation. Without going to the prosecution, without receiving a plea deal, he pled on the charges. The charges he pled to were second-degree murder. Remember, law enforcement could have upgraded later, but the charges that were on the books were second-degree murder and to read it exactly, assaulting a child under the age of 8. Now, both of these charges, I want you to know, are willful. It's the verbiage legally in these charges says willfully and illegal or unlawfully. And so I think that's very important. This was willfully done. He didn't roll over on the child. That's not what he pled to. He pled to second degree murder, which means willfully doing what he did to this child, Emmanuel. So he pled guilty to those. The prosecution wasn't involved, meaning sometimes a defendant will go to their attorney and they'll say, hey, listen, can you go to the prosecution and ask about cutting a deal? And you know, I'll plead, you know, we can plea. That's what he did last time, which essentially resulted in nothing but a little bit of community service. That's really what it came down to that Jake Haro got, and probation, obviously, or I'm sorry, and him being on supervised release, if you will, from the standpoint that if he committed any other violations, he could have his probation revoked. And that's, of course, exactly what happened here, in addition to the charges against the death concerning Emmanuel. So for his original crime, because he was on probation, he was, those charges were reinstated. But again, that was only 6 years, by the way, 6 years that would be tacked onto this for those violations, for violating his terms of his sentence being suspended. So it's really, really a sick case. It's one of these cases that I think there needs to be term limits for judges. There needs to be, the judge needs to know if he makes an error and allows a criminal to be on the streets and that streets kills another, I would love to see a law that would hold these judges responsible, because right now they answer to no one except, I suppose, their constituency when it's time for them to be reelected, because some judges are elected, some are appointed. Nevertheless, there needs to be something on the books where these judges are held responsible for these horrible decisions they make, like the decision to release Jake Haro, which was just absolutely unbelievable. But a lot of people are wondering, where is Emmanuel Haro? One of the things I do believe, well, I don't think it matters, honestly. If he threw him in those foothills where they searched for hours and hours and hours, if he threw him there, he's the chances of finding him are slim and none due to the wildlife, as I've mentioned, that would have just picked his little body apart. So I think it would be extremely difficult. However, I've always wondered if he was really left in that field. What about the clothing? you know, wildlife wants nothing to do with clothing. They strip the clothing off of what they're going to eat or prey upon. So the fact they found no clothing tells me either A, he was leading them on a wild goose chase, or B, he doesn't remember precisely where he left little baby Emmanuel. The other story, of course, from the Perkins operation is that he threw baby Emmanuel away, which would mean baby Emmanuel is in a landfill. Now, the only landfill operation recently that I've known to be successful is the Quentin Simon operation. And that was done so specifically and so thoroughly. Particularly, law enforcement knew exactly the dumpster that Quentin Simon was thrown into because they had footage of it. They knew exactly where that dumpster would have been dumped in the landfill. And that landfill was cordoned off fairly soon after he was dumped. And ERT, the FBI's ERT team, which is no joke, not only do these individuals train all the time on how best to find evidence, and they are so thorough. This is their secondary duty. So as an example, some of you may know, I was on the SWAT team 15 years and I taught firearms in the Bureau for 23 years. Those are just side jobs that we do. It's kind of like when you're in college and you go to college, but then you're also a cheerleader or you're on the debate team. That is kind of how the Bureau works. If you want to get involved in another specialty, you can do that as long as you're approved and you keep all your cases up, because you're going to be judged on both. When you're judged on your cases, there's no consideration that I just spent 2 weeks helping enforce martial law in the Virgin Islands after Hurricane Marilyn. You know, that's not going to be considered. You still have to keep up your casework and you're judged on all three. In this case, some individuals go into what we call ERT. It's the evidence response team. Now, regular agents are trained on evidence recovery. And in fact, well before the evidence response team was really kicked in full force, agents that were the case agents on their own cases, they conducted their own evidence recovery. But then as these teams grew and became very more specialized on particular cases, like a case like Quentin Simon that the Bureau was involved in, they will send out a team that's very precisely trained and that spend hours and hours in training. They spent 3 weeks at that landfill searching everyone. 3 weeks. And they found the remains of Quentin Simon. Juxtapose that to Sebastian Rogers, who many of us believe was discarded, possibly in the trash, and what did end up in the landfill. Remember, law enforcement thought that originally as well. They did a probable cause affidavit. They went and searched, but only for a few hours. And it was very confusing as to, they ended up searching the landfill from where the trash from that neighborhood would have gone, but they didn't do the search that we know of the landfill where the construction site dumped, because there were two different landfills. Nevertheless, obviously, law enforcement thought there could be indicia of the crime or Sebastian Rogers himself in that landfill, or they wouldn't have spent time searching. The problem is they did a half-assed effort. They should have called on the FBI's ERT team if they had indications that he was dumped, and they should have done a proper landfill search, because that search actually could have been done so contemporaneous with him being discarded. Because remember, that trash truck was there in the neighborhood and picked up that morning. Okay, I do not mean to digress, but I just wanted to point out the issue here. And that is, they are never going to find Emmanuel Harrow if he was indeed thrown in the trash and that trash went to a landfill. If he was dumped in that field, I think they're done searching there as far as I know, although the DA did say they were, and this was several weeks ago, said that they were going to continue searching and following different leads on Emmanuel Harrow. So why don't we know where he is for sure? Because Jake Harrow took the easy, cowardice way out. He basically said, okay, I'm just going to plead to the charges on the books right now before these get upgraded in some way. I'm going to plead before the judge. I'm not going to involve the prosecution, which means I don't have to tell them a damn thing. I don't have to tell them where he is. I don't have to tell them how I really killed him. I don't have to tell them anything. I'm just going to plead guilty before the judge. Again, this is exactly his modus operandi for what he did with his other baby. He pled before the judge, not involving the prosecution. Part of the reason, you know, that judge was able to just come up with what he decided, which was that suspended sentence I was telling you about. And I think it was only 6 years and, you know, saying, oh, we're dangling this over your head. I know I said 10 years earlier, but as I recall, it was actually ended up being only 6 years. I think he got some time served for when he was originally put in, and then he did some sort of, you know, community service. Nevertheless, I recall that about 6 years was left on what he would have served. Now, a lot of people ask, and this is why I really want to come on today, although I've talked about a lot of other things, to me for Rebecca Harrow. Well, let's look at what it meant for the mother of Jake Harrow's first baby girl. It meant she got off. She was never had to serve time or convicted of anything to do with her little baby. And I got to tell you, I sort of fear that here. The district attorney's office said they have no comment, but you know exactly what the defense of Rebecca Harrow is going to be. And that is, listen, first of all, I was beaten. You can see my black eye. I've got other evidence of beating. She's going to have all sorts of people come up and say, I was abused as well. She's going to blame it, you know, anything that happened on Jake. She's going to say, he did it. I didn't have anything to do with it. I don't even know what happened. All I know is he told me to make up some fake story to the media about changing a diaper and that Emmanuel was taken. Now, a lot of people, and I've noticed this on my ex account, and I've noticed it a lot here on YouTube as well, on both platforms, that a lot of people have a lot of sympathy, empathy, concern for Rebecca Harrow. And I understand that. I think it's clear, you know, she was abused by Jake. I don't deny that. But I don't think it gives a mother the excuse for their child to be beaten over and over and over again, for the brain damage to be that was caused on Emmanuel Harrow. I mean, we see it in photos. We see it in photos. And I think she's culpable. She's culpable for allowing those sorts of beatings. She's culpable for not leaving. And I know many will say, Jen, it's just so hard to leave. And I understand. I totally understand. Many of you know part of the advocacy I do is being involved with a shelter from the standpoint of raising money. I've spoken with many women who have left and gone to shelters and how hard it is. Actually, I really want to do a show with one of them. I know how, I don't know because I've never been in these women's shoes, but I know from what they have said how difficult this is to walk away, even from a completely abusive, horrible situation. Nevertheless, she had, in my opinion, I hold her responsible for not removing baby Harrow. I'm sorry, yes, baby Emmanuel Harrow from the horrible situation he was in at that home with this monster preying on him. So I think that she will go to trial. I think she'll probably have good counsel. Philip Dubé, who's one of my most favorite lawyers, I've had him on and he said, listen, I would represent Rebecca Harrow free, pro bono. That's how much he believes in her case. And so I know reasonable minds will differ. I've been around too many of these cases and I don't give her a pass. I'm sorry. I don't give her a pass. She was quite able to leave, go to a shelter, even if she didn't have family support or friend support, and go to the police. I tell you, somebody hit my baby, I'm at the police in 2 seconds. I don't care who it is. if it's my mother and my mother beat my baby, I would be at the police. That's just me. And that's how I feel about it. I have the most empathy for all women who have ever been abused in a domestic situation. I can't express how much that's a huge part of this platform. But where it ends with me is where you allow your baby to be beaten to death and thrown in the garbage. It ends with me. All right. I think that's about it. He will be sentenced on November 3rd, everyone. So please tune in. November 3rd is when he will be sentenced. I certainly hope he gets life. The statute says 25 to life, but I've got to believe that, you know, he's hoping that another judge will take it easy on him. And I got to tell you, I have no faith. I have no faith in the California system, about the same faith I have in the Massachusetts system of law enforcement or a judicial system. But let's hope that this judge sees what the other judge did and what the result was, because let's just say he gives him 25 years. That means he's going to be out in about 12 years. Okay. So now he's out in about 12 years. He's a young man. It's not like he's 70. He is young. He will still be able to go out and abuse other children, marry other people, have other babies. I hope it's a life sentence, because he gave both baby Haro a life sentence and he gave his first little girl a life sentence. So everyone, I told you it would be nice and short here on this Sunday. I thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you to my wonderful mods who always find a way to get on so quick. And come on, I appreciate it. And all of you who care about this case, all of you who tuned in, thank you so much. I appreciate you all. And until the next time, may justice be served for all our babies who are abused and killed by monsters like Jake Haro.
Want to break the case with Jennifer Coffendaffer even more? Then press subscribe right now and join Jen on YouTube. Just search Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer now.